You are listening to the JV Sports Talk Podcast,
a place where your average sports fan can just talk sports.
Welcome to the show.
Have a miracle left in them in what has been a magical season to this point. If they do, they need it now. Christie kicks it high and short. Going to be fielded by Lorenzo Neal at the 25.
Yeah,
pitches it back to Wycheck. He throws it across the field to Dyson.
He's got something. 30, he's 40, got something.
50.
He's got it.
40,
he's got 30, it.
20. 10.
He's got
5,
it.
End zone. Touchdown, Titans. There are no flags on the field. It's a miracle. Tennessee has pulled a miracle.
All right. Welcome to the JV Sports Talk Podcast, a place where the average sports fan can just talk sports. I'm your host, Daniel Smith, coming to you from my living room here in the west suburbs of Chicago. Welcome to episode one. I'm so excited for this show. First ever episode of JV Sports Talk Podcast. Honestly, this is the first ever episode of any podcast I've ever done, period. So for the six or seven of you who are listening to this, please leave some feedback so I can continue to get better and improve. We've got a lot of things on the docket today. Special guest interview with Kyle Smith coming up in a few minutes, so stick around for that as we share our takes on the NFL playoffs, including a mock draft of players from the remaining four teams. We'll talk Cavs and Warriors. We'll even get into a little baseball Hall of Fame debate. But enough with the intro. Let's get straight to it. And I want to start with this. Over the summer, I read Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers. And in the book, Gladwell makes this interesting claim. The idea that successful people in our world are self-made is a misnomer. And instead, these people are, and here's a quote, invariably the beneficiaries of hidden advantages and extraordinary opportunities that allow them to learn and work hard and make sense of the world in ways others cannot. So Gladwell devalues the idea of the whole picking yourself up by your bootstraps that's so often associated with success, and he instead shows that there's a lot of luck and circumstance that goes along with it. For example, it's no coincidence that Steve Jobs and Bill Gates were both born in the same year. Nor is it chance that 75% of professional hockey players were born in either January, February, or March. So let's shift gears, and I want to say that the same is true for sports. You see, legends, they don't just make themselves. Stars aren't born in a vacuum. Sure, to make it to the highest level, you have to put in your 10,000 hours of blood, sweat, and tears. But even then, a lot of luck and circumstance is what puts you above the rest. Okay? Exhibit A, Tom Brady. You're kidding yourself if you don't see the luck that's woven itself through the tapestry of Tom's illustrious career. I mean, you've got Bledsoe's injury, the Tuck rule. It helps him that he's been a part of the weakest division in the NFL for almost two decades. And lastly, he's been paired up with one of the greatest football coaches of all time. It's impossible to separate any of Tom Brady's achievements from the influence of Belichick, and to be fair, it's equally impossible to separate Bill Belichick's success from that of Tom Brady. I mean, if we're going to be willing to call him the GOAT, then he may also need to be called the LOAT, or the luckiest of all time. I mean, you see little bits of luck being game changers all the time in sports. Let's take last week's Saints-Vikings NFL divisional round game. At some point during the game, each team deserved to win. I mean, that's fair to say. But at other points, each team deserved to lose. And the final sequence. I mean, the Stephon Diggs catch as time expired should have ended in a very large gain and a loss for Minnesota. Not a game-winning touchdown. Not taking anything away from the play, but that did not deserve to be a touchdown. So then lost in all this outcome is the fact that Drew Brees helped drive the Saints down the field and take a lead with a minute left in regulation, seemingly securing an NFL championship berth, only to see his rookie safety with the egregious error that, frankly, takes away from Drew Brees' legacy. Who knows what the conversation would have been like this week if Drew Brees had won that game. And I'd be willing to say that Drew Brees would then beat the Eagles this week and make it to a potential another Super Bowl. I mean, sports are unbelievable. Entire seasons can come down to one single play. You remember the catch that wasn't a catch when the Steelers lost to the Patriots in Week 15? I mean, if the Steelers win that game, then they play Tennessee instead of Jacksonville and most likely host the Patriots in Pittsburgh today. But instead, they get the Saxonville Jaguars, and a few bizarre play calls from Tomlin, and the game of Blake Bortles' life, and once again, Big Ben finds himself on the couch during championship week. I mean, I give my wife a hard time for watching The Bachelor, but if I stop and think about it, the drama that is college and professional sports is unrivaled, and I have no shame in saying that I'm addicted to it. And if you're listening to this show today, then maybe you are too. And now it's time for the interview segment of the show, and I'm particularly excited about today's special guest. I've been talking sports with this guy since around 1996. We have done plenty of MLB, NFL, NBA drafts on video games, and this is my brother, Kyle Smith. Welcome to the show, Kyle. How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on. Happy to be a part of the inaugural episode.
Yes, sir. Let's dive right in, man.
All right,
let's talk Minneapolis Miracle from last week. Before we do, you know I'm a fan of play-by-play. I'm going to play the audio of John Brown's call live, and then we'll dive into last week's Minneapolis Miracle. Let's take a listen.
Marshawn Lattimore, 12 yards from Adam. Case on a deep drop. Steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side. Caught by Diggs. Stay
up! Oh, my God! Loose. Oh, my God!
30!
No! 10!
Touchdown! Are you kidding me?
Miracle finish!
It's a Minneapolis miracle! Step on Diggs! And the Minnesota Vikings have walked up on the New Orleans Saints! It's a 61-yard Minneapolis miracle!
Unbelievable play. I was sitting there at a friend's house watching it, and we decided to just unmute the TV for the final 2 minutes. I just thought I saw Drew Brees make history. I'm thinking Brees is back to the Super Bowl, and then that happens. Were you watching live, or did you just catch the highlights?
I caught the highlight. I wasn't watching it live. I caught the highlight, and same thing. Just stunned at the result of that play with Marcus Williams missing the tackle, kind of going in, trying to hit the hit stick on him, which if you play any Madden, you know the hit stick doesn't always work.
Exactly. That's what it looked like. Seriously, he bucked his head just like on Madden. It's like, what are you looking at? He knows he's the last line of defense, and he came in with hands by his hips, and he's trying to truck stick.
Hands by his hips, came in like a rocket trying to make a hit stick, but also I think he was worried about making premature contact and worried about a PI, which obviously would have flipped the field, giving him good field position. So trying not to get a PI, but also trying to make a tackle and kind of caught in between is what it looked like to me.
Exactly.
So Diggs comes down with the ball and has a free 40-yard route to the end zone.
Yeah, and that in itself was amazing because if I'm a wide receiver, I'm thinking, make catch, step out of bounds, make catch, step out of bounds. And the fact that Diggs toe-tapped the sideline and then had the wherewithal to just keep running just shows, speaks to his athleticism and his awareness in the moment.
Speaks to awareness of, I mean, you're in the NFL, you've got obviously a collection of elite top-tier athletes and competitors. So I think in Diggs' mind right there, you make the catch and there is no contact and you do see the sideline, but you also see 40 yards of open field and a pathway to the end zone to win the game. So that, I mean, he recognizes that on the fly and takes off and he knows, I'm Stephon Diggs, nobody's going to catch me from a 10-yard deficit.
Exactly. And now after that play, he definitely knows he's Stephon Diggs, as he did like a statue pose with arms crossed for about an hour after the
statue
game.
Statue pose, launches the helmet, should have been a big time penalty, but you'll take it in that situation
anyway.
Exactly.
I mean, I know I'm an average Joe fan. I know I don't know a tenth of what those coaches know. Surely, right before the snap, the defensive coach is telling the guys, look, don't get burned deep. Tackle him in bounds, anything. I mean, worst case scenario, this thing goes to OT. I mean, I'm sure they told him all that. But when I look at the replay, it looks like press coverage, which doesn't make sense. Just stack the guys deep. And then the fact that somehow Marcus Williams, I don't know. It's just one of those plays where your adrenaline is pumping. And like you said, it's a combo. Don't make the penalty. I want to blow this play up. And then it's just a huge mistake. Huge.
Yeah, and I mean, I think all the defensive players are aware of that too. But at the same time, talking about press coverage, I think that press coverage is used in obvious passing situations, especially if you have some physical corners like the Saints do with Marshawn Lattimore and Marcus Williams. Mm-hmm. So it's like they're trying to be physical off the, you know, within 5 yards of the route, whatever. So obvious passing situation, press coverage. I don't mind the press coverage in that situation, but at the same time, you cannot get beat over top, which I guess they didn't because Williams was there to make a play. And then it got botched, unfortunately, for him. But with that said, you know, the Saints are in a position in that game to seal the deal and win the game because of Williams' pick earlier in the game. So it's not like the guy played a terrible game and lost in the game, but he did have the most controversial, some would say boneheaded mistake that ended up losing the game for him.
Yep. And last thing on this, just think about Drew Brees. I mean, I love Brees. He flies under the radar. He's just a 5,000 yard machine. He missed out on a chance to add more to his legacy. I mean, does he come in and does he give the guy a pat on the back? Does he not say anything to him? Do you have to say something as the leader? Just what do you think he's doing?
I think it's, you know, obviously everybody's upset, but the difference between elite leaders like that, like your Brees, your Brady and everything, they know how to handle those situations, positive or negative. So I think Brees, kind of the guy that he is and the leader and the captain in New Orleans for the last 10 years, I'm sure he handled that situation in the best possible manner, whichever way he decided to handle it. So
yeah, you're right. More power to him. I would have been heated. It would have been tough for me.
Last thing on that, the repercussions for Marcus Williams. I know he deleted all his social media and everything because of the backlash he was getting from fans. I'm sure there were, you know, there's numerous terrible sports fans out there,
right,
who have never played a down of football in their life that are saying, I could have made that tackle, I could have made that play, given death threats, I'm sure, stuff like that. But you hate to see that for a player of his caliber who's going to be a special player in the league for a long, long time.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. You experienced a little bit of that playing college and professional baseball.
Yeah.
I'm a high school basketball coach, and I get some fans, some parents, some even opposing, you know, fans who run their mouth, and it's just, there's no place. And in the NFL, like, to social media, those things that they're saying to that guy, they would not say in the same room with him. They would definitely not say it to his face. No. Unless they want to get popped in the jaw. It's just, there are a lot of, you know, social media warriors out there. And yeah, that's just a disgrace.
Yeah. And I mean, in Marcus Williams' defense, he may not like it, but at the same time, he looks at his situation. He's like, you know, I'm going to be a Pro Bowler, this and that. I was a potential defensive rookie of the year candidate, if not to be beat out by the corner on the other side of the field for his own team in Marshawn Lattimore. But, you know, you're being paid to play football. You're a primetime player. I don't think he's got any issue with that.
Sure. Sure.
So he'll move on. He'll move on. He'll be fine. Some of the fans will hold on to that play a lot longer than he will.
Yeah, you're right about that. All right, let's move on. Let's move to the other side of the league, the AFC. So we're filming this podcast on a Sunday afternoon. The Jags-Patriots game is already underway. Do you think the Jaguars have a shot to beat this team? And before you answer, and I want to get your opinion on this, I was reflecting on this game, do you know who the Jags remind me of? There's a team that we grew up watching in the AFC that reminds me of this Jags team, and that's the 2000 Ravens.
Jamal Lewis. I was hoping you would say that because I had the same thoughts. The elite defense.
Yep.
And a ground game, a running back, and a top tier running back who
power back who can
is an elite
the line
power back who you can hand it off to 30, 32, 33 times a game, and he's just going to run you into the ground for four quarters.
And Trent Dilfer, I mean, he's not a Tom Brady. He's not a Drew Brees. He's a lot like a Blake Bortles.
He had
his moments. He's a game manager, but he made some big-time throws, and Bortles is going to have to make big-time throws to beat the Pats.
So my take on that, and I've thought this, you know, once the playoffs started, I said, if anybody matches up on paper to beat the Patriots, I think it's the Jaguars, and it's not because of Bortles and Fournette or any type of offensive explosion, but it's because they have an elite, historic-level defense who has the potential to disrupt Tom Brady and create turnovers and force Tom to make mistakes, which flips the field, changes momentum, wins the field position battle, and sets the Jags offense up better for success. So you don't have Bortles leading 85-yard drives. You have him leading 40-yard drives.
Exactly. And the best way to keep Tom Brady from making an impact is to keep him on the sideline with a jacket on. And don't let him on the field. So the longer the drives they have, the better. And the unsung hero in all this, I mean, the Jags won three games last year. Tom Coughlin comes in after getting abused in New York, undervalued. Mm-hmm. He comes in, and the Jags are knocking on the Super Bowl That's not a coincidence. Tom Coughlin is a magician. They call him the architect. And yep. he's also Bill Belichick's kryptonite. So that's an undersold storyline in this whole thing.
That is. And everybody, you ask around the league, maybe not amongst fans or anything like that, but you ask around the league, and that's why guys have the utmost respect for Tom Coughlin. And they say the same things about him that you did, that he was undervalued in New York, that people didn't appreciate how great he actually was and how good of a football mind he is. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, he goes to Jacksonville, and they go from a 3-win team to a chance to move on to potentially play in the Super Bowl.
Exactly. It's funny because I have in my notes here, and I didn't know we were filming today or recording today, but I kind of said the Jags, for them to have a chance, they need to injure Brady or injure Gronk.
Yeah.
And spoiler alert, Brady's hand this week, and Gronk's going through concussion protocol. I mean, the stars are aligning.
Yeah, here's my thing on that. Gronk in concussion protocol, obviously that's a bigger deal to me, I think, than Tom Brady's hand. For me, the whole Tom Brady hand situation was hyped up. He's not even wearing a glove on that hand, I don't think, anymore. Everybody's like, he's going to have a glove on. He's got to protect that hand, this and that. There's going to be a bloody glove. He's going to lead a drive. It's going to be reminiscent of Curt Schilling's bloody sock in Boston in 04. I just think it was a big media ploy to help cement Tom's legacy, which sure. he doesn't need any help, but I think it was just another chapter in his book.
Sure. Sure. And lastly on this game, Jalen Ramsey. Okay.
Jalen Ramsey.
I'm so Love sad him. The Titans Love did not him. Draft him.
Yeah.
I mean, Corey Davis made two great catches, don't get me wrong, and he's going to be a great choice. But Ramsey, he might be the best DB in the league.
Ramsey is the best DB in this league, and I'll touch on that a little later, too, in our
You know
our
who he reminds me of? He reminds me of a healthy Eric Berry who talks trash like Kevin Garnett. I mean, the dude is the best trash talker already, and he's just a young buck.
He's 24 years old.
At the most,
Best trash talker in the league. It's his second year.
Yeah.
Elite lockdown cornerback. And those are few and far between. I mean, this is his second year in the league, and he's drawing Charles Woodson comparisons. He's drawing, with his ball skills, he's drawing Ed Reed comparisons.
Yep.
So he's already in 2 years in elite company as far as conversation.
Yeah, and I misspoke when I said Corey Davis. I meant Jack Conklin. That was the year we took Conklin. But yeah, I just every time I see him play, I wish I could see him in the light blue, the Titan blue. All right, welcome back to JD Sports Talk. Thanks for listening. That break in our action was sponsored by Rest Stop Ministries in Nashville, Tennessee. Restore survivors, stop oppression. January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and if you want to learn more about what Rest Stop is all about, please visit their website, reststopministries.org. I'm your host, Daniel Smith, and I'm back. Kyle Smith on the other line. All right, well, let's switch gears. Let's move on to NBA.
Mm-hmm.
I coach basketball. I love basketball, love watching basketball. And in the last probably 6-7 years, there was a shift in me from college ball to pro ball. Maybe it's because all the guys I grew up watching are now like the leaders of the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
I know that me and you love talking NBA. So let's just hit some of the major topics right now. We're kind of right before the All-Star break, so it's a good time just to reflect.
Yeah.
Do you think anybody can beat the Golden State Warriors, or are they just too good?
I can answer the second question. To answer that question, are the Warriors too good? Yes, they are too good. They're that good. They're for real.
Is it hurting the league? Is it hurting the league?
No, I don't think it's hurting the league, because that's the way that the league is headed. It's a league of super teams. And also, not only, I mean, I know we're discussing NBA, but you're starting to see that in other major sports as well. All the best players want to play with and surround themselves with the other elite players in the league. It's more fun for them. And so I got no problem with the talent that the Warriors have.
Yeah. It's like it's the same talent as the Cavs team now. Because before the year, okay, the Cavs reloaded, D-Wade, D-Rose. But the Warriors are in their prime. The Warriors are still athletic. The Cavs just are so old. It's like if the Cavs had this same roster from 2006, then we got a game. But the way it is now, I just don't see the Cavs beating the Warriors. There's no way.
Here's my thing is you'd be stupid to ever count out a team that has the best player in the world, LeBron James. You'd be dumb to ever count him out.
So he hasn't been dethroned by KD yet, you don't think?
No, he hasn't been dethroned. He's the best player on the planet right now still, and obviously the whole, you know, greatest of all time conversation too. I mean, he's in that conversation. He's top three in that conversation too. So agreed. I don't think
I'm a big LeBron apologist. I love LeBron, but you gotta admit he's not an automatic bucket like he was 5 years ago. Like 5 years ago, he could get buckets 24/7.
He can still flip that switch. He's doing some different things. I mean, it's later in his career, whatever. He's operating in a different style. But I think if LeBron wants to, LeBron can take it to the rack on anybody, anytime. And it's not the way that offense runs anymore. But I think going back to the Warriors, I mean, I guess Warriors and Cavs, the backbone of the Warriors outside of their talent is their management. I think Steve Kerr, when you compare Steve Kerr to Tyronn Lue, that's a no-brainer right there. Who do you want mismatch as the captain of your ship?
Yep. Definitely Kerr, no doubt about it.
Right.
You just mentioned LeBron, okay, can go to the rim 24 or can go to the rim whenever he wants. Here's the thing though. You can't trade twos for threes. And the Warriors have, I think, tell me someone that you think is better, but I think they have the three best shooters in the NBA, Klay, Steph, KD. Nobody shoots the rock like those three guys.
No, I agree with that too. Maybe you could mix in a James Harden into that conversation, but still, you've got three of the best four or three of the best five perimeter shooters in the league on the same roster. So yeah, you can't trade two for threes. You can only hope that they're going to miss some threes down, and they're not going to shoot lights out. No, that they're not going to shoot lights out. I look at it, you know, too many teams, I feel like college basketball and the NBA, it's a three-point league now. Everybody wants to shoot threes because
– Oh, and high school basketball, trust me. What do my JV guys do when we roll the balls out to get warmed up? There's jack no up layup lines. We're jacking threes, baby.
So here's my thing is you got to hope – I mean, granted, those three-point shots for your Klay Thompsons, your Steph Currys, and your KDs become higher percentage shots, but still – when you run the numbers around the league, that's a lower percentage shot. So I guess you're playing the numbers there, and if LeBron can go down and dunk or get a layup or get a layup and an and one, then it's 3 points versus 3 points. And you can only hope that the Warriors aren't lights out and they're gonna miss some shots. But at that point, you gotta get rebounds. You have to rebound the ball.
You have to steal possessions, you have to win the free throw battle, and there is something to the whole field goal percentage. I mean, LeBron averages 50-55% from the field. Those other guys don't. They're 47-48. I mean, yeah, LeBron shoots more twos, but he does it at a higher clip. So
yeah,
it's going to be a game. But
it is a game. It's two different styles of play, which is why, I mean, it's not going to be a 4-0 or a 4-1. It's going to be a 6-7 game series always between those two teams because of just the way that you have two offenses working and two sets of numbers, and the numbers, it's a law of averages. So you're going to go 6-7 games in these series.
Yeah, because here's one thing. I do agree with you. Nobody on that team can guard LeBron.
No.
KD can't guard LeBron, I'm sorry. Draymond, LeBron's going to mess Draymond 8 out of 10 times.
Draymond's
going to
foul
once, and he'll flex, but that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But here's the thing, and before we move on, I don't care if the Warriors win not four, not five, not six. I don't care if they win seven straight championships. I will never give KD a pass for leaving the Thunder to join Golden State. Never. I don't care if they win seven in a row. I'm still not going to say that he made the right decision. I just can't. It feels like he sold his soul to the devil.
I know where you're coming from, but what you just said, you may not be able to give him a pass, but personally, he'll be able to go to sleep at night with seven, eight titles, whatever it is. Because he went and got seven, eight titles, and he was the guy on that team. He's the guy on that team. It's not Steph's team. It's not Klay's team. It's not Draymond's team. It's KD's team. So I got
he might be the guy, but I'm gonna see him play in person one day, and I'm gonna try to yell, or maybe as he walks the tunnel, I'm gonna whisper in his ear, "You took the easy way out, Kevin." And I know when he puts his head on the pillow at night, he's gonna remember that.
No, he's not, because hey, those seven championship rings are going to be shining bright in his jewelry box. So he's not going to care what one fan said to him one time.
So, but man,
that's
unbelievable.
That's my take on it. He wants to play with the best. Granted, he had a good team in OKC, but he didn't like the dynamic there. So he's going out, made a career move, career decision. Best for him. you know, however he wants to validate it. And the Warriors are the best team in basketball, and they're going to win several championships.
They are. Unless the unibrow comes to Cleveland, baby. LeBron and AD, that's what I want. I heard the rumor mill started, and I jumped on that train. Bring the unibrow to Cleveland.
Yeah, I'd like to, trust me, I'd like to see that too. And there, you know, there's no telling anything can happen in the NBA in the next couple of years. So,
yeah. All right. Well, that was fun. Final big three. We want to talk a little football, a little basketball. Let's finish with a little baseball action. It's the off season.
Yeah.
But moves are being made.
Yeah.
I know you saw this.
I did.
Some teams have been unloading. We got Gerrit Cole. The Pirates are just having letting guys jump ship left and right. Gerrit Cole is now with the Astros. The mm-hmm. defending World Series champion Astros, I might add. And then Andrew McCutchen is with the Giants. What do you think about it? Good moves for both? What are the Pirates doing?
Yeah, here's my thing. The Pirates are unloading. They're trying to get rid of some contracts. So they take their two biggest contracts and they get rid of them. I mean, it's tough to see them go. Andrew McCutchen's been the heart and soul of Pittsburgh for the last 8-9 years, whatever. He's the face of your franchise. He's the 2013 MVP. One of the elite center fielders in the game.
Consistent, day in and day out.
And you've got a fan base that has basically adopted him from the time he was 22 years old, and he became the face of your franchise. So anytime you deal a face of a franchise, much like Evan Longoria being dealt to the Giants, you know, he was the heart and soul of Tampa. And even though Tampa was bad, even though the Pirates were bad, That's my thing. The Pirates were going to be bad with McCutchen and Cole. So it's like, all right, now we'll still be bad, maybe even worse. But now we've got a lot more money to make some other moves, go out and get some international signees, some free agents, whatever.
Yeah. No, you're right. And it's good to see like star players move to teams because, I mean, the Astros, I saw Gerrit Cole's interview and he said exactly what I was thinking. How would you not want to join what the Astros have working?
Right.
I mean, that lineup, and now with his arm in the mix, it's like the rich get richer. I mean, we were texting a lot during the World Series. That lineup is just fierce, and now they got a guy who's a first or second starter to mix in with their rotation.
Yeah,
I mean,
so now, you get Gerrit Cole, he's got video game type stuff. All this, he's electric. He's a frontline starter. So you put him in a rotation with Dallas Keuchel, with Justin Verlander. It's like, come on now.
I mean, that's a team that we draft on a video game, you're right, where we trade all of our picks and we cheat the system.
Yeah, and on the Astros front, it's like you give up a few prospects who are going to go. There wasn't really a spot for Colin Moran. He's a third baseman. You know, it's like you've got Alex Bregman, the emergence of a superstar. So it's like Moran's going to be a bench guy at best in that system. So now he's got a chance to go to Pittsburgh, play every day, basically create a career for himself. So good for him. And then going over to the Pirates in the McCutchen trade, mm-hmm. they've got
or the Giants, yeah.
Yeah, they got Brian Reynolds, who, you know, was the first pick of the second round last 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So he was kind of the up and comer, new. He was the center fielder of the future for the Giants, but mm-hmm. deal him for an elite level center fielder that can help you win games right now.
Sure.
So I think it's a good move for the Giants. It's a good move for the Pirates, and I think it'll work out for everybody. But with that said, the Astros know that their window is now,
exactly.
and they're taking full advantage of it. And I think with the acquisition of Gerrit Cole, they just solidified their spot as World Series favorites again next year.
Exactly. I mean, if in professional sports, you don't get many chances. When you see it, You jump on it, you throw all your money at it. It's kind of like what Gilbert's doing with LeBron. Cleveland, when LeBron moves on, Cleveland basketball will be in the tank for another 50 years.
The Cleveland Cavs will be the Cleveland Browns once LeBron moves on.
Exactly. And so the Astros, I mean, they had a little run with Bagwell and Biggio and all those guys, but now they're back. They're back, and it's
– They're back, and they're young. Their core group of players is young. You've got the AL MVP and Altuve, who's 27.
Yep.
And
he's changing the game. He's a fan favorite in the way Curry is. Curry's undersized. Altuve's undersized. It's like your average Joe's watching baseball on the couch. Your kids are just like, hey, I can do that. If Altuve can do it, I can do it.
So
Which is extremely wrong, but it's still encouraging.
it is. And it's fun to watch, too. And from a baseball guy, knowing kind of some ins and outs of how different organizations value different things, I love what the Astros are doing. And they're taking an analytical approach that's kind of changing the course of baseball. And it's like you've got all these teams that are now buying into analytics because they're seeing what the Astros are doing and they're seeing it work. And we've talked about Altuve. It's like you got a 5'6", 160-pound guy who's hitting close to 30 homers. It's like, you know, they're literally changing the game of baseball, and it's fun to watch because this current Astros organization can have a 6, 7, 8, 10-year run that goes down in history as one of the best teams ever assembled.
Yep. And public service announcement for any MLB teams who are looking for a manager. If your team is sold out for analytics, you can hire me, and I can dress up and play the part and just do whatever your GMs tell me to do. Kind of like what a lot of these managers are doing.
Yeah,
it's so true. You see the people, the analytic guys, they make the lineups. They do a lot of the substitutions.
All the substitutions, going to the bullpen during the game, pinch hitting. It's all coming from the top down. So the managers are like puppets. They're not making the calls. They're all coming. They're all coming from elsewhere. Even you look at the Los Angeles Dodgers. They've got a manager, Dave Roberts, who's a baseball guy. He's a baseball mind. He won World Series with the Red Sox. He's a grinder. He's a baseball guy, but he doesn't call the shots there. He's just the face that, you know, acts on whatever he's told by his bosses.
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of people realize that, but it's true. And I mean, shoot, I'll make a few hundred thousand. I'll take a pay cut. You just pay me $200,000, and I'll eat a lot of sunflower seeds, and I'll pace up and down and look really upset when my team makes errors. I mean, I can do it.
They'd probably be more than happy to pay you a couple hundred thousand.
Exactly.
You've got Joe Maddon. You've got Roberts making $5 million a year.
Yeah, I'll take a big pay cut.
So,
you got one more thing to add?
Yeah, we're talking baseball around the league. Obviously, we mentioned the Astros, heavy favorite for the World Series with the Gerrit Cole acquisition. But you can't argue with what the Yankees are doing. The Bronx Bombers are back. They went out.
Bronx
they got
Bombers
Stanton.
Are so back.
So
back.
You've got Stanton. You've got Judge. You've got literally. You've got 110 home runs between two guys, which
and is some, it true? Is it true that potentially Harper could go to New York or maybe a Machado next year?
Potentially a Machado. I think Machado is more realistic to land in New York than a Bryce Harper. There's talks about the Cubs looking to make a run at Bryce Harper when he becomes eligible. And I think, you know, we're talking general managers, this and that. I think Theo Epstein has got it figured out. He knows what he's doing. Everything he touches turns to gold. The Cubs are no different than that. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Bryce Harper in Chicago with the Cubs.
That'd be nice. I mean, I know him and KB are good buddies. They play a lot of board games. So
yeah, both
that.
Two Vegas guys grew up playing together, rejoined forces with the Cubs, and go win a bunch of World Series.
Let's do it. All right, last baseball topic, and then we'll take another break and then shift into our Fast Five for the day. Hall of Fame talk is happening. I think it's next week. I don't know about you, but growing up, when I'd see who's making the Hall of Fame, like Dad would try to tell me all these stories about so-and-so, these guys that I've never heard of. But now it's all the guys that we grew up watching, and it's
right.
A lot more fun. I'm a lot more interested on who's getting the votes, who's making it in, who's out. It's just exciting. So real quick, and then I want to hear your thoughts. Right now, and this is as of mid-January, Chipper Jones looks in, 98%. Vlad Guerrero, 94%. Jim Thome, 93%. Edgar Martinez, 80%. Trevor Hoffman, 77%. And remember, you need 75% to be inducted. So those guys are looking in. Give me your thoughts on them, and then we'll talk about those who are just out.
I think all those are their locks. I mean, the guys that you just listed, I think, and the numbers back it up too. They're getting around 80% all the way up to 98%, 99% of vote. So
yeah, our boy Chip.
Those guys are locks.
Best third baseman of all time. No disrespect
to
Mike Schmidt, but never saw him play. So it's Chipper all the way.
Yeah. If you look at, you know, you look at that list and then you see even the steroid era guys like Clemens and Bonds, their numbers, their voting percentages are going up. So I think.
Yeah, they're at 65 right now, both of them.
Yeah, people are starting to understand that the way baseball has gone, that you can't deny generational type players. Like the best players of a generation deserve to be in the Hall of Fame because that's what it is. It's a collection of the best players from every generation to make up Cooperstown. So I think you look at the steroid era and all the controversy there with Bonds, McGuire, Clemens, whatever, those guys, they're starting to come around, get more votes. And I think soon enough that they'll get in, and that'll start the wave of all of those controversial players getting into the Hall of Fame, which I think is good for the game.
Yeah, me too. They need to be in. I mean, Barry Bonds was a multi-MVP player before the whole steroid thing. Same with Roger Clemens. And, I mean, yeah, they need to be in.
Yeah, and it's like now you've got some of the older players pinning letters saying, you know, I'm speaking on behalf of everybody in the Hall of Fame. It's like, no, you're not. You're speaking on behalf of a couple players that feel a certain way, saying these guys shouldn't be allowed in. But at the same time, the players pinning those letters are the same players that took – four or five greenies before every game for their entire career. So it's like, if you're going to hate on performance enhancing drugs, I mean, I get it. Greenies were legal at the time, but it's, you know, it's the same thing. It's a performance enhancer, but I don't like all those, the old veterans that are already in the Hall of Fame trying to protect it by keeping players out. It's like, man, these are
like
players that were
the old get off my lawn.
Yeah, it's like these are players that were better than you. And it's like when you're talking about Barry Bonds, you're talking about the best hitter of all time. Like numbers show you he's the best hitter of all time. You can't deny a player like that. Pete Rose even. It's like I don't think the media wants to give Pete Rose the satisfaction of getting in the Hall of Fame while he's still living. I think Pete Rose will be in, whether it's while he's living or after he's dead, he's going to be in. You can't keep the hit king out of the Hall of Fame.
No, you can't. I mean, in some ways, though, he's almost more of a legend now. Like, we talk about Pete Rose. If they had just put him in the Hall of Fame, then Pete Rose's name would be along there with, like, George Brett, like people who we talk about. But now Pete Rose, I mean, he's everywhere. Maybe in a lot more, in a certain way, roundabout way, it's kind of grown his popularity.
Yeah, right? I think it's maybe even the controversy itself has been beneficial. You hear – any publicity is good publicity, I guess. Maybe that's the case. But then I look at Curt Schilling, and Schilling's, you know, receiving a bunch of backlash and getting snubbed because of his antics on the internet, on social media, outbursts, political views, this and that. It's like, listen, Hall of Fame, you're going to deny a player, a worthy player, an influential player in the game, a chance to be in the Hall of Fame because of some stuff that he says on social media. Like, come on now.
Give me a break. Like, are we in third grade? Yeah, I agree with you 100%. 100% on that. And people who are doing that, they need to check their agendas and just figure it out.
Right. But it's good to see that the numbers are going in favor of some of those guys. Curt Schilling's kind of the outlier, and it's because his situation's a little different. But I do think the voters are starting to figure it out and transition to where they're like, hey, these are some of the best players that the game's ever seen. We can't continue to deny them.
Yep. Well, you just mentioned voters are seeing it. I want to close with this. There's one guy that the voters aren't seeing. He's a guy who's dear to both of our hearts, growing up Braves fans.
Mm-hmm.
I think our boy Andrew Jones might get snubbed out of the Hall, because if he doesn't make the list, the docket, you don't go back on.
Right.
And there's so many names now that he might get snubbed. I mean, what do you think? Is he a Hall of Famer or not? Are you sad that if he gets the snub? I mean, what do you think?
My short answer is yes, Andrew Jones is a Hall of Famer, and I think everyone, the voters, are aware of it, and they'll at least get him enough votes to stay on the ballot for a couple more years so that then they can eventually get him in. But I mean, obviously he's not a first ballot guy. He's not a, you know, he's not a Mike Schmidt. He's not a Chipper Jones. He's not a Pedro Martinez, anything like that, but he's Hall of Fame worthy. And I think when you look at top 10, top 15 center fielders of all time, he's up there, and you got to put him in.
Exactly. If you're a top 10 player in a certain position, you need to be a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's got 10 gold glovers, but he's also mashed over 500 home runs.
Yeah. So you've got not over 500. He finished, I think, with 434.
Ah, okay.
But
500
would
be the magic number.
Yeah, 500 is magic number. He falls shy a little bit. 2,000 hits is kind of a milestone number, too. He's got 1,933. But he's a generational type player. And he's got career average, 162 game average of his career. So 143 hits a season, 254 average, 32 home runs, 95 RBIs. And that's only offensive numbers. Like you said, he's a 10-time gold glove winner, which is the exact same number of gold gloves as Ken Griffey Jr.
Right.
So
maybe he'll get in. Hopefully they see it. Well, hey, this has been a blast. Let's take a quick break. Then we'll come back with our top five for this podcast. Let's do top five Nashville restaurants. I know you went to college downtown. You now live downtown. We both grew up in Nashville, so I'd love to hear your opinion on this. So we'll be right back after a short break to talk Nashville restaurants. All right, we're back. Ready to do a little more JV sports talk. That commercial break was sponsored by Foldable Flight, the central hub for paper airplane creation on the World Wide Web. Visit foldableflight.com and get lost in the best paper airplane designs, tutorials, and gift packages for all ages. Once again, that is foldableflight.com. All right. Growing up in the Smith household, you learn to love food and respect all types and flavors. Shout out to Mom and Dad Smith on that one. But me and you are both foodies. Mm-hmm. Just want to hear your top five Nashville restaurants, and then I'll give my top five, and we'll see if we have any crossover. So let's hear it.
All right, top five for me when I was kind of putting this list together, I was thinking personal and kind of the landscape of the city and what the public thinks are kind of some of Nashville's best restaurants. But number one, I'm a huge fan of it, and when you're talking Nashville, you got to talk Hot Chicken. And the leader in hot chicken right now is Hattie B's. I mean, you pass any of their three or four locations on any given day, 7 days a week, and there's about a 2-hour line just to get in the door. So Hattie B's, I've been there several times. It's a lock. It's got to be in the discussion.
100% agree. It's in my discussion. It's in my top five. So I knew we might have some crossover. That might be the only one, because I also, you kind of went a different way. I kind of went my personal faves, but Hattie mm-hmm. B's is one of them. It's so freaking good.
It is.
One for one. Okay, what's your second one?
Second one? All right. I kind of went for a Nashville staple. Granted, it's not actually downtown. It's out in Bellevue, but it plays on comfort food and all things comfort food. I'm going Loveless Cafe.
Ooh. Tell us about Loveless Cafe.
What's I don't know if you've ever been there, but you go there. I mean, it's a meet and three. It's old school. It's what you think about when you think Southern food. It's biscuits. It's jam. It's biscuits and gravy. It's fried chicken. It's chicken dumplings. It's pork chops. And there's several meet and three type places, but I think Loveless is the historic and the top of the ladder when you talk comfort food or meet and three.
Yep, Loveless is great, and I wanted a meet and three on my list because I'm living up in Chicago now, and there aren't as many meet and threes. Mm-hmm. And I went proximity to where I went to college for my meet and three choice. I went to Trevecca, and I went Arnold's Country Cooking.
I know you
had it on your list.
I had it on my list. It was second in my meet and three category behind Loveless.
Yeah, I love Arnold's. You can't go wrong with Loveless. You can't go wrong with Arnold's. Love me a good meet and three. All right, what's your third one?
All right, third, I've got word for word anything on M Street. M Street is McGavick Street, trendy area over in the Gulch, which is absolutely blown up. And they've got this hospitality company that basically bought all the real estate on that street. And so there's several restaurants. There's Cane Prime, which I think is one of Nashville's top two or three steakhouses. There's another Italian steakhouse place called Moto. There's like a trendy sports bar called Whiskey Kitchen, which also plays on Nashville's Jack Daniels,
right?
Whatever. Yeah. And then,
so are some of these new spots? Cause I got this one's, I'm jotting this down now cause this is new to me. I haven't heard of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's fairly recent.
Been the last five,
I mean,
six I think years?
It's, yeah, it's probably been developed since you've been out of Nashville, but there's another spot too, a brunch spot with a Mexican flair called Saint Añejo, which is one of my personal favorites. So I've got
you anything sent me a picture of your omelet from St.
Yeah, anything on M Street is a good spot to be, and I think the majority of Nashville would agree with me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, my next one, another classic, not going to blow you away, but just like if I could imagine a burger and milkshake joint in the perfect like ambiance, then it would be Rotiers. Rotiers has been a Nashville staple. It's in an old historic building. It's in a great part of town. It's also over near West End. But I just love, if you want a burger, they got delicious poppy seed buns, great milkshakes. Go to Rotiers. Like dim lit, kind of like old style burger joint.
It is. It's old school. Kind of feels like a little where a Nashville mobster would go to get a burger.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
I would have agreed with you there probably 5 years ago. But the last time I went, I was severely disappointed. So Rotiers didn't make my cut, but it was up there at one point. So if we're going burgers, there's I mean, there are some new places too. There's Burger Up, there's Burger Republic, there's Hop Dottie, there's Hopsmith, all these new
Pharmacy.
Yeah, Pharmacy Burger. Now that you say it, I didn't have it in there, but since you said it, Pharmacy Burger, no doubt, got to be in there, top five. Yeah. If you want a burger in Nashville, I'm going Pharmacy Burger. I'm not going to Rotiers.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Okay, we got two more. Go ahead and hit me with both of them, and then I'll give my final two, and we'll wrap this up.
All right, I've got kind of a combo, but I'll limit it to one. I think if you talk Nashville, you can't leave out the famous Pancake Pantry.
Mm.
And I think it was good. We needed a breakfast spot on this list, so I'm throwing Pancake Pantry in there. Hillsborough Village, arguably one of Nashville's most historic spots. So I'm
going
Pancake
Pantry. Yeah, get there early. Got to get there early. Yep. Okay. And what's your final one?
Final one, I've never been there. I want to go there. Catbird Seat / Patterson House. I've been to Patterson House
because that's my last one too. Yeah. So go ahead and talk about it.
I've been to Patterson House. It's kind of like an old school speakeasy type bar that you walk in on the bottom level. And the Catbird Seat is their restaurant. Select like 10 or 12 top table.
Yep.
Got to book a reservation 6 months, a year in advance. I've looked at it for several holidays. And for
it's
holiday
like 200
reservations.
Bones ahead, right?
Yeah, it's like $200 a head. But for holidays, whether it be Valentine's, New Year's Eve, whatever, they're literally booked up for the next like 5 years.
Unbelievable. Yeah, Catbird Seat. It's a bucket list thing.
I mean, yeah, it is a bucket list thing.
I will go to Catbird Seat. My best friend Preston Hunt and his wife Erin, they've been to Catbird Seat, and he raved about it.
Yeah,
raved.
And so I mean, he's not alone. It's been on Food Network, Travel Channel. It's up there with. I think the outside would call Catbird Seat Nashville's number one spot, but it is so selective that a lot of people hadn't had the chance to experience it.
Sure. Well, my last one was Butcher Town Hall.
Yeah.
I had to put it on there solely because that's the best brisket I've ever put in my mouth last time we went with the family. So if I know you might want to close this out with maybe your favorite barbecue spot because you're a barbecue connoisseur as well, but I love me some Butcher Town Hall brisket.
Yeah, I've never been to Butcher Town Hall. Heard it's really good from everybody who's been there. They say the same thing that you do. But if we're talking barbecue, there's two places that I'm going that I can get in on a daily basis, and that's Jack Cawthon's barbecue. It's called Jack's Barbecue. He's got a few locations, one on Charlotte, one actually on Broadway, and then another one over by Demumbrian. And I love Jack's. It's just your standard barbecue, but also Martin's Barbecue.
Yeah.
I think the original is on Belmont Boulevard. I was there the other day. Best smoked chicken wings I've ever had. They've got this Alabama white sauce, really good stuff. So I'm all aboard the Martin's Barbecue train.
Yeah. I mean, for people who haven't been to Nashville, and I'm sure we have a lot of Nashville listeners, but its food scene is so underrated. And if you go in, you can eat for days.
Yeah.
I mean, and you will still not have tried all the places you need to try. I'm looking forward to, I mean, anytime I come back for holidays, I always try to knock off a new restaurant. But the Nashville food scene is, I would say, top 10 in the country, or at least.
I would too. And even for locals, it's like there are so many new spots and just so many different spots that I haven't even explored and living here the last 6 years. So
Well, hey, just kind of in conclusion, since this is the inaugural episode, thank you for joining us. This is just, I listen to a ton of sports talk. I know you do too. We both love sports, and I'm just hoping to use this JV sports talk as an outlet, maybe a once a week thing or a bi-weekly episode, just to hit the hot topics, talk sports. And I know we're not professionals, but I think it'd be nice to have a perspective from just your typical fan who, I mean, we have our few teams that we ride and die with, but we also just consume the drama that is college and professional sports and even high school sports. And so thank you for joining me on this show and just giving me your hot takes. It's been a blast just for the last hour and a half just to kind of sit back and feel like we're back at home on the couch just talking sports.
Yep, I agree. And thanks for the opportunity to be on the inaugural episode of JV Sports Talk. But I think, you know, there's one thing that we did leave out in this conversation today. We can save it for another episode.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't dive into the Titans. It's out. They just hired Mike Vrabel, Texans defensive coordinator, former Patriot linebacker, as their head coach. In short, I'm pumped about it. I'm excited about it. He and John Robinson have a long, outstanding relationship. So I'm excited about that hire.
Yeah, me too. I don't know how we didn't talk Titans. Mike Vrabel, Patriot connection. You're right. Bring it on. From what I'm reading, he's got tons of energy. I know he did as a player. I just need a quarterback guru QB whisper to come in. So
yeah, that's why
that's
why
that as his OC, which it sounds like there might be somebody in the works. Has it been solidified?
Not yet, but whoever it is has to be kind of that QB whisperer type
guy.
It has to be.
Well, hey, again, next week we'll dive more into Titans. If you do, maybe I'll give you a call in just so we can talk Titans. But for anybody else who's listening, give me some feedback on Facebook. This is my first ever podcast. No, it's not perfect, but let me know what you liked, what you didn't like, if there's a special segment you'd want to hear, and then be on the lookout for maybe a Twitter for JV Sports Talk to pop up. I just want this to be a hobby and maybe something that the more anyone who wants to be involved can get involved, and we'll see kind of where this thing goes. So, Kyle, thanks for being on.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
And everybody else who listened, appreciate it. And until next time, I'm Daniel Smith. This is JV Sports Talk.
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.